Hi, and welcome to More Than a Refresh, a podcast about data and the people who wrangle it. I'm Amanda Nystrom, the Chief Operating Officer at Command Prompt, a leader in open source excellence since 1997. We hope that you enjoy the podcast today and contact us for your Postgres and full stack needs, including 24/7 support. Find us at 503-667-4564 at commandprompt.com or at sales@commandprompt.com. Enjoy.
More Than a Refresh is brought to you by GreenPlum Database. GreenPlum is a PostgreSQL-based, open-source, massively parallel database for analytics, machine learning, and AI. A VMware technology, GreenPlum is a modern database that isn't limited by your data size or vertical scaling limitations. For more information or to get in touch, visit greenplum.org.
Welcome to More Than a Refresh, a podcast about data and the people who wrangle it. Our guest today is Peter Zaitsev from Percona. Peter, introduce yourself.
Yes, so as you mentioned, my name is Peter Zaitsev. I am founder and until recently CEO of Percona, the company which helps you to run open source databases better.
So let's talk about that for a second. I saw your LinkedIn update where you changed your title. Why the move from CEO to just founder?
Well, I think over the last few years, I have been seeing what I am doing less and less of a CEO job, kind of different that to my second in command. And I thought it would be the good time to make that an official, right? Okay. And the reality is, I think myself, I'm first and foremost a geek, entrepreneur, technologist, right? And as Percona has grown to more than 350 people recently, right? That's involved doing a lot of things which I frankly dreaded, right? So I find myself now feeling much better in different role, right? And I'm not so much in have to be involved in their company administration stuff.
Yeah, I know the feeling with Command Prompt. There was a point where Amanda Nystrom was promoted to COO. She's our senior project manager. I'm sure actually you met her because of PostgresConf. And I was talking to one of our senior engineers and he asked me, why the change? And I said, well, because I am not a manager. I'm terrible at it. I have different talents. And so, yeah, I get the point. I get why you'd want to do that. It does free you up, right? When you're CEO, there's certain constraints to what you can do, what your thought processes can be, what your vision is. And being able to switch out of that and have someone who's more talented in that arena frees you up. But let me ask you this. By being freed up like that, what has it done for you? I mean, obviously, it's been a gradual progression, but what do you now feel that you can pursue now that you're not, quote unquote, CEO?
Oh, well, this is so new, just about a week since announcements, right? I think what reality is still to sink in. But if you think a lot of changes were already happening, and I found myself over last few years being involved in other projects, many open source projects, and I really involved that area of being advisor, mentor, but not having that day-to-day a responsibility, right, which CEO job includes, right? And that is why I thought it would be good to have more time for that, right, to transition in that founder role at Percona, right? So I have more time for other projects as well.
You said advising and mentoring. One, I want to applaud you for that because I think that that's important, especially for people like ourselves. We've been in the industry for so long. How long have you been in open source?
Oh, well, it's more than 20 years, right? So that's almost infinity, right? By by the modern standards, yes, but quite a long time.
Do you find that? How can I put this? So it seems that there's a new generation of open source out there. It's becoming more difficult, I think, to find contributors. It's become more commercialized. And there's nothing wrong with commercialization of open source. I mean, obviously, your company and my company do that. But it seems like open source has become more of a job. Do you find that, or do you still have passion for actually working the open source beyond the ideology?
Yes, well, look, I think what you're right in terms of what open source is changed, and I would even say more like a splitting, right? Because I think there is, and that is probably the minority, right? What this is, what I like to call like romantic open source, right? And the people saying, hey, you know, we are doing the open source for its goodness, right? And in many cases, because of their, you know, selfless reasons, right? And then there is their open source as a business, right? That is the open source which we hear a lot in the media about billions of dollars of venture funding going in, right, and so on and so forth, right? The challenge for me is what if you look at this kind of a second kind of open source, right? In many cases, it stopped actually being open source, right? You can see over the last few years this kind of creation of a lot of their folks open source license. Right, or other approaches which like to use open source for marketing, but do not really adhere to open source values, if you will, right? And what I find the most kind of problematic and dangerous in a certain level is what a lot of the folks from the new generations, they don't really understand the difference, right?
Right.
And the reason for that, I think, comes from the fact that open source and software engineering has become so damn mainstream, right? Now, I think probably when you entered the industry, for sure, when I entered in the industry, right? If you were doing computer stuff, you were those kind of weird nerd, right, in this case. Like, you really have a passion, you know, you really kind of was very kind of unusual. Right, in this case, right, and if you think about now, not open source, but software engineering as a tool is just seen as a very good job, right? And many people go to that which do not have particular passion for the industry, right? They just say, well, you know what, I'll go. Pass training, study something, and then go and get a job, and that is fantastic, right? So amount of people involved in the industry, right, it's kind of enormous, right? But much more small sliver of them have a passion, so what we used to see, right, I think, in, you know, late 90s, right, or earlier.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I started in getting involved in around 92 or 93 or something like that. A long time ago. And there was a time where I would compile the Linux kernel every single time it came out, and I would fine tune it, and I would remove the modules. And even for a long time, as you know, we supported Postgres, we would compile our own version with our own flags. We even had a fork for a while that had replication before Postgres had replication. But now, what I see, I think there's two sides to this. You brought up the using it for marketing and then not realizing what open source means. For, you know, a good example is Elasticsearch, right? Where, oh, wait, you mean because we released it under this license, anybody can use it and do what they want with it? Well, yeah, that's what open source is. Well, we're not going to let you do that anymore. Okay. So there's that side of it. And frankly, I have no problem with that. It's their code. If they want to change it, it's their thing. My only issue is that they didn't, they either didn't have enough confidence in their product to think that people would actually use it outside of them, or they didn't understand what open source meant. And either one of those is a little disturbing in my mind.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't quite agree with you here completely, right?
Okay.
Because on two levels, right? First and foremost, right, I think a lot of those, you know, oh my gosh, we didn't know, right? It's all actually planned in advance. And you cannot see that only in an open source, right? Think about Uber, right, as an example. What is the model? Hey, have very low prices, capture markets, drive taxis out of the market, raise your prices,
sure. Right?
That was the model which was understood, you know, from a beginning, right, of course. But that is not something which is being shared with the public, saying, hey, you know, guys, we will make sure, right, what we will eliminate all your choices, and then we will actually, you know, raise the prices and you have nowhere to go. Because if you do that, then customers may make to do some other choices. Think about Elastic, for example, right? It's always kind of kumbaya, and Elastic is actually having a lot of contributors. It is not just Elastic all that road. Elastic is not Mongo. Mongo almost had no contributors, right? And the fact that Mongo is changing to SSPL, yes, that is their own stuff. Elastic deliberately misled a lot of developers to give a lot of time to contribute to Elastic with an understanding what their code will be available under open source license. And then they say, oh, thank you. Now the combined work is only available as a proprietary license. And yes, right, that is illegal, but that is bait and switch.
So your take on it's a little more devious than mine, I think. And you know what? You're right. I think that we have concerns. You're starting to see more and more articles about this. Things like cloud savings is not demonstrating, things like that. And without mentioning certain cloud providers who you and I do conduct business with, is there a concern that one of those cloud providers, any one of them, it doesn't matter, will get to a point in the market where there's an artificial ceiling that they can bust through to raise prices? And when I say that, before you answer, in my mind, it's very similar to what you said with Elastic, except that I don't think there's only one. I think there are three primary providers, and I think they golf and have scotch in the same place, and they're planning a certain threshold so that possibly the government doesn't intervene for monopolistic, you know, practices, and then they can create an artificial demand for high prices. What do you think about that?
Well, what I think about this is actually like a quite interesting, right? If you look at some of the cloud's presentations from the early days, we were comparing cloud to electricity, saying, hey, that doesn't make sense for most of us to run our own generators, at least all the time. We just buy this utility and it's wonderful, it's you know, cheap and so on and so forth, right? But the thing, of course, with electricity, it is commodity. Wherever you go, right, the electricity is the same, and in certain cases, you can change providers, right? Mm-hmm. But then, of course, they changed, and now what every single cloud pushes is this highly differentiated proprietary cloud platform. Right, mm-hmm. They push you not to just to say, hey, you know what, use this that is as a base layer compute and storage. No, you go and use our highly differentiated, unique, you know, data services, right, or whatever it is, so you cannot move, right?
Yeah,
and I think this is what I would, And I think that is what is the main thing, right? Is that kind of journey, right? I think every cloud out there is really wants you to make sure what they convert customers to hostages, as Oracle has done before, right, and many others. So you don't have anywhere to go, right? And then, of course, we are going to extract as much value as possible. In that, I actually remember talking to one of the relatively senior managers in Oracle. And what he told me, saying, well, you know what? Our salespeople are wonderful at one thing, finding the fuck you price. And I'm saying, oh, what is that? So they say, well, that is a price after which customers will tell you, fuck you. I am not signing. I will go out of business. I will migrate, right? And then coming up with an offer, which is, you know, just, you know, 1 cent below. Right, or whatever, right, in this case. So really driving to that, right? And I think in this case, it is in the customer's interest to make sure you have much more balanced relationship with your vendor, right? And that is only achieved by you having a choice.
Right.
Right, yeah, if you don't have a choice, you're a hostage, you're not a customer.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it's not unlike the 90s, you know, forget the 90s. It's basically the cloud in a lot of ways, at least with the larger providers, it's just closed source software. They just used open source implementation to create a closed source API, right? If you write to, you know, and I'm not, frankly, I'm not even being negative about these cloud providers because they clearly, I mean, from an economic perspective or from a capitalism perspective, they are producing something people want, right? No one holds a gun to your head and says, move to the cloud. The unfortunate part is that a lot of the people moving to the cloud do not understand what it means, because all of a sudden you have all these developers. You hire these developers that, let's say Amazon, you hire developers that are Amazon educated, which is good. They make great money. It provides for families, things like that. But then all of a sudden you take that same developer and all they can do is Amazon, right? Because they only know the Amazon APIs, which means that once the cost threshold is too high, and it will eventually get there, a good customer will always evaluate the value of the service they are spending money on. So if I spend X money on Amazon, is it more or less than what it would cost for me to migrate out of the platform, right? Am I going to gain more money or lose more money? And when you hire expertise that is specific to a single platform, you are locking yourself in. It's not like, so let's take Procona, for example. Command Prompt and Procona were kind of competitors, but not really. So if we take, you know, Command Prompt focuses on Postgres and all the infrastructure related to Postgres, whereas Procona does Postgres, but you also do MySQL and all these other, I think, don't you even have a Mongo fork?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so you're more broad spectrum. Mm-hmm. But either way, if someone goes to Procona with their Postgres stuff and they decide they don't like Procona, which for the record, we have never run into that, they can come to Command Prompt or vice versa, and the shift is nominal, right? We both have our experts. We both have our staff. Our procedures might be different. The tools we use may be different, but we're still supporting Postgres. We're still supporting Linux, right? Whereas when you go to, say, Amazon RDS, now the world has changed a little bit. And sure, it looks, smells, and feels like Postgres, but I can't download it. And if I can't download it, there's a reason. And it's not because they're trying to keep it from you. It's because of various implementation details they don't want to share, right? And then you got to ask yourself, if you I'm sure you've run into this, interviewed people who say on their, you know, on their resume, yeah, I got Postgres experience. I got 3 years Postgres experience. And you start talking to them. They don't have Postgres experience. They have RDS experience. And it's different. And you start saying, well, how do you tune a single relation for auto vacuum? And they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Why would I do that? Right? You start talking about parallel workers. They don't know. What they know is how to hit a button and have a standby pop, fire up, something like that.
Oh, yeah. What I would say in this case, I think a lot of that we have seen before, right? A little bit in a different context, right? You can say even kind of maybe the 90s, right, you are speaking about. Mm-hmm. Like the Microsoft, for example, and all that Microsoft stack was rather powerful.
Yes.
And there are have been a lot of developers who would not be very comfortable, right, or comfortable at all outside of that Microsoft Microsoft stack,
mm-hmm.
right? But as their Linux and open source world kind of developed, well, first that attracted new people, right, and then well, some of that. The you know Microsoft folks changed right and jumped to that right environment right, and I think that is what we are likely to see in this case as well. What is interesting about the open source, in my experience, is what because it doesn't get, and I mean like especially like a pure clean open source with such a massive amount of a cash infusion, especially mm-hmm. in the marketing. It often takes quite long time to get to maturity, right? To get adoption and so on and so forth, right? In this case, but then it is more efficient, right? For obvious reasons, right? And it kind of gets this inevitable gravity pull, right? So right now, what we see in the cloud, right? Yes, of course, like Amazon's and other clouds, right? Well, they exist now for a while. But at the same time, we see this cloud native work, right, mm-hmm. is being done, right? And you can see from this cloud native project, right, more and more useful stuff is coming up every year, right? And I would expect that is what will continue to pull the gravity towards that, right? I think another interesting thing what we had, if kind of from an open source history, right? What was a fundamental event in the open source history, in my opinion, is .com crash.
Yeah.
Because before got the .com crash, you could be developing using Microsoft, or you can be using Sun, Solaris, and Oracle, right? Very expensive way to do things, but you know you could attract the money to do that. And then after .com crash, well, guess what? The new generations have to be much more scrappy to innovate,
yes.
right? People have a lot of time on their hands, but they did not have money to pay Suns and Oracles, right? And guess what? They built their new generation on Linux, on Postgres, right? On MySQL and so on and so forth, right? And I believe now, as then we're coming a full cycle and say, hey, you know what? Money is not so easy to come by anymore. When you'll have, again, people who will have time, but not money. And if you have to spend more time to build solutions on this kind of cloud-native stack, but only using low-cost commodity cloud services, you will do that. Mm-hmm. And likely we'll see that again more in startups, right? And then gradually migrating more to the enterprise stack, right? That is how I see that kind of cycle repeating itself, if you will.
Well, I think that, I mean, the cycle kind of always repeats itself. I mean, you see it, I mean, in the bank issues, the financial industry and stuff like that. We tend, for some reason, not to learn very much from the past. But here's a little, it's a side metric, but you made me think about it when you said the .com crash, right? You know, one, there are people that you and I right now are interviewing and hiring that have no idea what you just said. They don't know, they have no concept of what the .com crash was. They're 35 years old and they don't know because they were, you know, 14 when it happened. That to me is a little bit telling because we're ending up in this situation where there's a lot of people that are starting to say, oh, that won't happen again. Right? But we are starting to see some things in the industry. We're starting to see the companies that over the past, say, 5 years, 6 years, would just shovel money out the door, right? They don't even care. Just write the check. They're now starting to think about it. They're tightening their belts. They're recognizing the inflation problem and things like that. And I think that some of our younger professional peers, even though we're not that old, oddly enough, are really about to get hit pretty hard with a large stick of reality, right? But hey, enough on that for now, because there's plenty that we could talk about. I'd really like to talk about Percona and some of the value that you guys bring. Command Prompt has always had a great relationship with you guys, and it's a very positive and respectful relationship. And so let's talk about that. You know, where did Percona come from, and where do you think it's going to be in 10 years?
So Percona got started 16 years ago, so quite a while now, right, by technology pace. And first, we started as the company specializing in professional services around MySQL. Mm-hmm. Right. Over time, a couple of things changed. First, we found what just doing professional services and advice is not good enough if software is not great, right? Mm-hmm. And with that, we started to innovate in software space as well by building our own kind of extended and improved version of MySQL. The second thing what we found is in many cases, the best way to help the customers and build a sustainable business is having a long-term relationship with them, mm-hmm. Right? So a lot of our businesses switch to recurrent businesses such as support and managed services, right? Which we just recently united in the Percona platform subscription offering. And the third big difference is what we have expanded beyond MySQL to cover most popular open source databases, right? Because of a lot of customers putting us, right, which their MySQL, MongoDB, and Postgres. Now, I just want to be clear, right? Like, I recognize that MongoDB is not open source anymore, unfortunately. When we started, that was open source database. Unfortunately, they changed the license, and we were faced kind of in this, interesting dilemma, right? Whatever we want to, exit MongoDB markets, right? Or, right, we just have to, follow them and provide somehow MongoDB software under a source available, a license, mm-hmm. right? And that's what we ended up doing.
Well, I mean, AWS did something similar when it came to Mongo, right? They created DocumentDB. And that sits on top of Postgres. So that's not all that surprising. I mean, I had Mark Porter, who's the CTO of MongoDB, on, I think it was last year. And they're doing some interesting things. And, one of the things that he said, which I agree with in the sense of his mindset, but I don't agree with necessarily in the sense as an open source advocate, right, is that, their license, without getting into legalese, it basically boils down to you can do anything you want with it as long as you don't turn it into a hosted service, right? But all their drivers and stuff are open source. So I do think it's fair to say, they're trying to walk a very fine line. They're not doing what some other companies have done and like flip the tables on people.
Well, I think this is it's an interesting question, right? In this case, right? Because what you're saying in this case, hey, we let you to do whatever you want, right? But not the most important thing. You said yourself, and I think absolutely correctly, is that when you are looking at somebody who has that 3 years PostgreSQL experience, most mm-hmm. likely they just have experience to managing that as a database as a service.
Right.
And that is only going to continue to improve, to change in this way, right? Is what more and more people are going to be only capable of running database as a service, right? And MongoDB creates a monopoly in this case. What they want to make sure is what any database as a service MongoDB database as a service in the world, right, is either done by MongoDB as an Atlas or done under, MongoDB license, right, creating that hosted situation, right? That is very different from Postgres, for example. There are a lot of players which offer hosted Postgres without having to be under some of a Big Brother fan.
Right. No, that's definitely true. It's interesting that you pointed that out. I wonder, so there's, you know, we, people seek convenience, right? That's the nature of humans, right? We seek convenience. We don't want to go to the DVD store or the Blockbuster, so now we have Netflix, right? That type of thing. Well, I don't want to hire a DBA, so I will just run RDS. But I think the problem here is, technologically speaking, the reason DBAs exist is because, and it's not just Postgres, it's any modern database has a lot of knobs to make it do what it's supposed to do. And it doesn't matter. Sure, RDS can remove, say, 80% of those knobs, right? But so can reading best practices for Postgres, right? If you took a day and educated yourself, you can remove those knobs yourself. It takes the expert to know which are the 80% and which are the 20% that you got to pay attention to, right? And I think that's what RDS doesn't do very well. And that's not even a fault of RDS as much as, you know, technology isn't something you can just put in a box. And although it is a lot easier in some places now, there's a lot of brain trust and brain power that goes into managing these systems for a reason. It's not because people are looking for job security. It's because they're complicated systems. An analogy that I like to use, you know, people ask about Agile. And they say, well, you know, JD, what are your thoughts on Agile? Well, I think that Agile is valuable, right? I think that the 30 minutes a day doing the stand-ups, checking your blockers, knowing what your team is doing, that's valuable. The harder part for me to see value is the constant change. Because if you look at an engineering project, and I'm not talking about software, I'm talking about like build a skyscraper. Skyscrapers are not built out of Legos for a reason. When you're architecting an enterprise system, you can't just shift, change, twist. You're introducing a higher level of complexity by doing that than having proper project management, thought out milestones, those types of things. Let me ask you this. You know, we've been talking a lot about data in the abstract with Postgres, MySQL, Mongo. What do you think the value of a user owning their data is? And the reason I ask this is because, you know, we've had the EFF on, Electronic Frontier Foundation. And we've had Boltive on, and they're about, auditing your advertising and tracking and things like that to make sure that it's clean, right? It's not corrupted, for lack of, you know. So what do you think I don't think a lot of people realize that they just don't really own their data anymore, whether it be personally or commercially.
Yes, well, I mean, I think that is a very interesting topic, right? And I think it goes to the fact that not, I think, only we do not own our data, but we often do not even know what kind of data about us exists.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is kind of a first, the first problem, right? Well, I think a lot of that, of course, has to do with, privacy, right? And fairness, kind of, if other people extracting value from that without your permission, right? But I think there's one more interesting thing a dangerous thing in this case, right? If you have a third parties having that ability to capture and process data in this case, right, they often can manipulate us, right, into doing their bidding, right? And that's, to a certain extent, kind of even removes your personhood, right? And I think if you look at like some psychological research in this case, right, I think people tend to over estimate how sort of independent they are, right? Like, for example, almost everybody can say, oh, that's kind of, you know, propaganda ads. I'm not influenced by those. Of course I don't, right? Well, actually you do, right? In this case, whatever you believe it or not, right? And I think that is very, of course, well, dangerous, right? In my opinion, right? Where that can take us if it's not managed properly.
Well, I think, right? I mean, you,
and I think what is also interesting in this case, because we are, I think, living in that time and that generations, right? Where machines can actually do that, right? Like a, you know, artificial intelligence, personalization. Because if you think about, like, you know, 30 years ago, right? Well, you're in that kind of madman era, right? Where that's political science or ads, right? That's kind of creative people thinking, you know, how to do X or Y, right? It's not so much kind of data driven, right? And we may not even like understand, wow, how exactly do we, you know, influence people? Well, we don't do, machines do that, and we just act weird, right?
Well, what we're talking about is social engineering, right? And when I spoke with EFF, that was a big topic. And you're right, I think that people don't know how individual they really aren't, right? You and I, we identify as open source, right? People will drive a car and, you know, for a long time, perfect example, for a long time, I drove Swedish cars. I drove Saab until Saab no longer existed. And then I drove Volvo until Volvo got purchased by the Chinese. And now I drive a Ford, okay? And now when I go to look at other cars, I always hold it to the banner of the Ford, even though there's no particular reason to do that, right? I mean, realistically, when you're talking about the level, you know, when you're, for example, I drive an F-150. When you're talking about an F-150, a truck is a truck is a truck. You know, the Dodge is kind of prettier. The Chevy is more aggressive looking. The Ford is a little bit more utilitarian, but it's the most popular, right? But am I really going to notice a difference if I buy the Dodge? Well, no, probably not. Except, damn it, I drive a Ford, so I'm going to look at Ford first. That's all engineered through advertising, through branding, through social engineering of peers. And, you know, when the other Ford owner makes sure that he parks next to you, but gives you enough space to open your door, it all bends together, right? What do you think? So when we talk about owning data, this is something Command Prompt runs into as well. How are you going to handle your, you know, like Percona's legacy planning and the future of Percona with what are your plans there in regards to, say, for example, clients owning their data?
Well, if you think about Percona, right, we are focused on solving specific problems, right? Mm-hmm. And where we can help the most is for customers to have their commercial data is to have a choices with that, to run their database everywhere. Hey, you want to be on cloud, on-prem, and so on, right? They give you the choices, right? Now, I think you mentioned a very important thing about the usability, mm-hmm. Right? And I think that is something which you need to do a lot of work, because I think conventionally, a lot of the best kind of like hardcore innovations in open source was done by this kind of hardcore experts who don't particularly need that kind of, you know, pretty simple things, right? They often even kind of don't value them, right?
Right.
But to make things accessible, usable for 99%, right, that is something where you need to have other kind of work, right? And that is, I think, where we as open source community need to do a lot of work, right, if we are there to win back the market. So what at Percona we are doing is As I mentioned, I believe that opens the database as a service, right, is because it's the most simple way to provision the database, right, and to deal with to interact with databases invented so far, that is dominating the market. But that does not mean they cannot have that based or have an offering which is fully open source based, right? And that is what we are building. Hey, we want to make sure we build a fully open source database as a service solution, right? You know, obviously standing on the shoulders of the giants to give the folks who are already addicted to their database as a service ability to run their database on any cloud, on-prem, on the edge, right, wherever.
Okay, fair enough. So basically, it's funny you say that. You know, when Lindsay connected with you, I said, you know, Peter and I are kind of like minds, so it might be an interesting conversation because we're going to say some of the same things. Command Prompt's working on something similar. I don't think we're doing it the way that you're doing it, but it will be open source. But I don't want to go into that. What I'd like to talk about, you mentioned to Lindsay. Lindsay's our producer for our audience. The term radical open source or being an open source crusader. Talk to me about that. What is that?
Well, the radical, like these are both the terms which some folks used about myself and about Birkhona, right? Whether that was meant as a joke, as an insult, right? Or as a descriptive, I'm not quite always sure, right? But I think when people talk about radical open source, right, they think that is what Birkhona's approach is. And what that means is, unlike many companies in our space, all software which our customers run is open source, right? There is no proprietary software which you can buy from Birkhona, right? There is no, right? And that is defined by some people as what they've been radical in this form, right? And to a certain extent we are, but I think that is also an important differentiation for Birkhona business compared to many other folks in the field, right? Let's say, well, you know what, you can go and buy in like a proprietary MySQL enterprise from Oracle, right? Or you can get a fully open source version, which does, you know, 95%, right, of what that enterprise version from Oracle does, sometimes more, right? But it's 100% open source, right? For many, that is a very important value. When we talk about the open source crusader, I think that goes to really me advocating open source principle and calling shit on some companies out there, right? Like I was very non-complimentary about Elastic, right? Mm-hmm. And specifically, people sometimes I think misunderstand me to a point is I don't believe like proprietary software has a right to exist. No, right? Oh. I believe proprietary software has a right to exist. It is just for you as a consumer, open source is better. What kind of pisses me off, right? People are disingenuous about what they're doing. Like Elastic saying, we are doubling down on open. What the hell are you talking about, right? Why are you trying to confuse people? Doubling down on open, right, by ditching open source license? Like, okay, like I understand if you talk to me saying, hey, you know what? We need to abandon open source license because we do not have an idea how to make money if you stick to open source. And we as a company, of course, need to be first and foremost profitable. I can understand that, but do not bullshit me with that doubling down on open, right? And I think that's really finding that explanation. Right, for that stuff, right? That is what really, which I really hate, right? Sure. Because you, you know, as a business, and, you know, I understand as an entrepreneur, sometimes you have a choice between bad and worse, right? And you have to make that choice, right? But you know what? You can be honest and, you know, deal with that, or you can try to, you know, they explain it right if some bullshit.
So one of the things that you said with Dracona, and this is actually interesting because this is something that Command Prompt has gone back and forth on a lot. You said that if you do business with Dracona, everything that Dracona does is open source. You have no proprietary software that you can buy from Dracona, which I commend you on that. That's awesome. You know, Command Prompt started as a professional services company. Then we went to products. And then we abandoned products and went back to professional services and support. And we're actually working on a product right now that will be 100% open source, except, and here's the except, if you use it for a proprietary platform, you will have to pay. So here's the idea. You want to manage Postgres, as an example. You will be able to manage Postgres freely. You downloaded it from PostgreSQL.org, or you used apt, or, you know, I forget what they use on Red Hat because I don't use it anymore, but Yelm, I think, is where it is. And cool, download, use it, modify it, submit a pull request. That'd be great. Thank you very much. It's under the, I think it's the Apache license. But if you want to manage RDS Postgres, you're willing to pay for Postgres, so you're going to pay Command Prompt too. If you want to use our tool for managing RDS, you're going to pay for it.
So what are you saying? Are you going to have like a two versions? One is open source,
well,
another
be,
is proprietary?
There's going to be an extension. Okay. There'll be an extension you install that is specifically written to take advantage of how RDS works. Right? And that
okay,
extension...
Yeah, that makes sense, right? And I think in this case, saying, hey... in a way of monetizing that, saying, hey, you pay them, you pay us too, right? And I think
exactly.
That's a very, very reasonable approach, right? And I also kind of commend you on saying, hey, you know what, we are going to have an extension. So this stuff is open source, right? And this mm-hmm. is an extension, which is appropriate.
Yeah, and I think that's an equitable way to do it, right? If you are a proponent of open source and you are using open source, then use our open source tool to manage that open source for free. Do it. Love it. And if you want to buy a support contract, great, but you don't have to, right? But if you want to use it for a proprietary piece of software, and I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand, RDS and Aurora are not PostgreSQL. They are proprietary software. They just happen to speak the same protocol and generally speaking are the same thing, especially RDS. Generally speaking are the same thing, but they're not. You can't download it. You can't open it. You can't see what they've changed. You don't know what plan or changes they made, what cost estimates they made, all those types of things. All right, so let's move on from that again. You said that, and I agree with you, you said from a consumer perspective, open source is the best choice. Now, you and I both know we came up in a time where that always wasn't the case. Now, I've used StarOffice before it was OpenOffice, right? I now use LibreOffice, even though OpenOffice still exists in the Apache Foundation. And I have almost always been able to do that, but that's because I have created a silo of the tools that I'm willing to interact with. There was a time when LibreOffice just wasn't enough, right? Now, for 98.765% of people, LibreOffice, including companies, it's more than enough. But can we say that about other software? I mean, I only run Ubuntu, and I've been doing that for a really long time. I've run Linux for so long that I can't even... I mean, our COO runs Windows, and occasionally she asks me for help, and I get in there, and I just want to punch the screen because it's so stupid. But do you think we're at a point now where the average consumer, right, they want to keep track of their photos, they want to word process, they want to do email. Are we there with open source?
Well, I think in this case, like I probably should like clarify what I would say, right? In this case, like open source is better, right? Things being equal, right? And that is, of course, where things are not, right? Because typically there are going to be, you know, some benefits and drawbacks, right, for open source software and, you know, their commercial equivalent, and that is a choice, right? I think if you look at the open source, it has has success more in some areas than others, right? And I think what you can see, like on the server market, right? We have huge number of servers run on Linux, open source, right?
It's probably 98% at this point, especially on the internet.
Yeah. So in this case, right? But if you think about on the desktop, well, you run Ubuntu, of course, but that is kind of more of exception than a rule, right? And a lot of folks run Windows or Mac OS, Mac OS those days, right? So I think that is kind of where it's it varies about the area.
Well, I think that I would agree with you. I think from a business perspective, hands down, whether it be Red Hat Enterprise Linux or whether it be Ubuntu Pro or whatever they call it now, I think that pretty much you can replace all Windows desktops with that. Because if nothing else, if there's some application that must be run on Windows, you can use a remote desktop, okay, or a VM. For that matter, there are exceptions, and I'm talking about business. I'm not talking about consumer, right? When you start talking about consumer, you start talking about Adobe products, or you start talking about games, right? But I'm talking about going to work and getting the job done, especially now that the majority of people out there go to work and get the job done in Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure, right? The desktop is becoming more and more irrelevant.
Yeah, that becomes kind of your terminal, right, where you run your browser at like right. Extent.
Well, I mean, even this podcast, right, that's what we're doing here. Our video platform is in the browser, right?
Absolutely.
Now, I'm looking at these notes here, and I'm just double-checking here. We'll cut this part out, but I wanted to make sure that I have the right time frame because I know you have a hard cutoff.
Yeah,
I'm looking at these notes here, and I didn't, it's the producer that interviews you. And this question surprised me to even see in the notes, being who you are and who I am. Mm-hmm. Can OSS, open source software, ever be enterprise grade? And I find that a very strange question because most enterprises are running open source software, right? They're running Linux. Now, it might be Red Hat Enterprise Linux, but they're running Linux. To me, the question that I would ask now is can someone like Apple or Microsoft with their proprietary platforms actually catch up and be enterprise grade?
Well, I think in this case, right, and you, I think, had this interest in your chat here, right, which I think actually kind of changes a lot, right? There are a lot of companies, right, then they run Linux, let's say, well, that's going to be enterprise, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, right, which is, I would say, the open source based, but that is commercial product, right?
Correct.
And I think that is something what we need to draw the line here, right? With PostgreSQL being a great example, because if you think about, I go to postgresql.org, I download Postgres from there, right? Is it enterprise grade from technology standpoint? Yes, it is.
Yeah, now, I would say, yeah.
Is it enterprise grade, let's say, from a business standpoint?
No.
No, it's not.
No, it's
because
not.
Because enterprises, they typically need to make sure we have a commercial relationship for support, supply chain security, warranties, yada, 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 yada. And PostgreSQL.org, right? Well, they're simply not set up to provide this kind of thing.
But we right? are.
Well, you are. That's right. And that means is what, at large extent, you have to have that kind of the commercial entity, right, which is involved in the relationship, right? Maybe code, maybe open source, maybe proprietary, but that is another story, right? And I think that you have to realize what, like, the open source, like, as I remember Martin Nichols was saying, like, open source is not a business model, right? When you speak about the open source, that is like, well, let's say the license for code, the development model, right, or whatever, right? And then you have a bunch of businesses which can which are built about that, right? And then you're speaking about the enterprise in entering in a commercial relationship, right? Well, that needs more than just open source code.
No, yeah, that's actually a really good point. So, and it certainly depends, because there are companies that are truly fully open source as part of their business model. But open source itself, you're absolutely right, it is not a business model. It is a component that you can build a business model on top of if you know what you're doing. And certainly within the enterprise, if you think about it, and I'm sure you have these clients too, you know, when you're talking about clients in fintech or health tech or any regulated industry or Fortune 5000 clients, that class of enterprise is very, very different than your 150-person company down the street. Unless they're really specialized, right? It's a very different type of thing. They don't have the same security requirements, the same business continuity requirements, the same insurance requirements, and so on and so forth. All right, so we're going to wrap it up here. Let me ask you, let's wrap it up with these two questions. What does the Postgres community get right? And I'm going to rephrase that. What does the PostgresQL.org community get right? And what do you think are PostgresQL.org's largest challenges?
Yeah, well, I think a PostgresQL history, right, in general is interesting, right? And you know what, before getting in PostgreSQL business, right, for many years I was looking at PostgreSQL from afar. Mm-hmm. And I think for a long time there was this kind of attitude in the PostgreSQL community is what PostgreSQL is a database for smart people, right? Like, you know, if you are not really kind of smart enough to figure out Postgres, hey, you know what, you just should not be in the industry, right? And I think this is interesting what, if you talk about this raise of a PostgreSQL popularity, right, of the last decade, a lot of that, I think, actually happens due to other areas, you know, like Heroku, right, RDS, mm-hmm. right, some other companies which say, hey, you know, now we are going to make this wonderful Postgres, right, which is on the other, also kind of hard to run, very easy to run for developers. Right. So I think, right. But I think that also helps if that goes kind of downstream and that is really understood, understood more. Right. And I think if you look at from Postgres standpoint, right, to attract more of their younger developers, mm-hmm. right, which are taught in a different ways, right, you need to embrace some of a new usability, right? Like, for example, I find this kind of, let's say, process of emergence, right?
Oh, there, if you look at, stuff.
You know, commit stuff, right? A lot of patches get, you know, submitted to a mailing list and discussed, right? Instead of like a traditional kind of pull request process, right? Which a lot of other areas, right, are supporting. Right, that is, I think, like one of the, you know, missing areas. Right, that would.
I think that's actually the largest challenge. Right there, every developer I talk to, every person that I know, that is not in the PostgresQL.org's inner circle, right? When I talk to them, like, hey, you should contribute. Their answer always is I am not putting myself through that commit fest process. they need to move to a modern platform. And it doesn't have to be GitHub, right? They'd be fine with GitLab, right? Because it's open source, but using the normal pull merge that people are used, you know, pull request type thing that they are used to.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that is a thing, right? What I think has been great for PostgreSQL.org, right, is of course this is maintaining their independence, right, and kind of really well, that kind of remains, I would say, like the only popular database, right, which is not controlled by some, you know, huge vendor, right? I would say that was another greatest gift to a PostgreSQL ecosystem when MySQL was bought by Oracle. Because has so many enemies, right, in this case. Now, and now if you think about, hey, you know what, if you want to get folks, right, to the database, if I would kind of sending them to Oracle, right, or some other party, hey, you know what, PostgreSQL, that's it's it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's another wonderful thing which goes on.
No, I would agree with you. I remember when when Solaris bought MySQL, I said hooray. I have never been a MySQL fan. We don't need to go into why. I never have been. But I said hooray. And then when Oracle bought Sun Microsystems, I went out drinking because it's been a party for Postgres companies ever since Oracle bought Sun Microsystems, if you knew what you were doing. And with that, I'd like to thank Peter Zaitsev. Told you I might butcher that. For joining us. He is the now founder, not CEO, of Precona. Yes. I invite you to visit Precona. They are a great company. They also run a great conference called Precona Live. Not as great as PostgresConf, but still a good conference. And I look forward to talking with you again, Peter.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Gio, looking forward to talk to you again sometime soon.
This podcast is hosted by JD, Command Prompt founder and Postgres conference chair, and is produced by me, Lindsay Hooper, director of events at Command Prompt, Inc. Command Prompt provides Postgres support, professional services, custom development, and community leadership. Since 1997, we've focused on providing just excellent service, custom tailored to your organization's needs. We'll see you soon, wherever you get your podcasts.